Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
So welcome back to The Wonder, and happy equinox to you.
Happy equinox, everyone.
It is the moment when the days and nights are equal in length. More or less, depending on where you are on the globe. Mm-hmm. If you're north of the Tropic of Cancer or south of the Tropic of Capricorn, or maybe I have those backwards, then it won't be quite, they won't be quite equidistant.
But for those of us in North America, it's probably closer to the 16th or 17th.
Yes. Yes. So it's kind of a moving target. Yep. But it's a really important time of year. The moment when the dark half of the year tips over into a time that's dominated by more sunlight than darkness. And of course, that's going to slide all the way to the summer solstice when we have those beautiful long evenings. And the sun comes up early to give us a super long day. So we're going to talk about the spring equinox today and about what it means to us and how we celebrate it and all that good kind of stuff. So to the questions.
To the questions. Okay. Well, our first question is, what does a spring equinox mean to you? Do you want to start with that? Me first? Okay. Well, of course, there's as an astronomical date is a lot of fun for me. My master's was in space studies, so I definitely nerd out over the specifics of it, and I'll set an alarm on my phone so that I know the moment that our orbit is passing through the ecliptic, and that's just it's definitely fun to think about our context in the solar system and relative to the sun and relative to everything else. Because we are often so focused on our everyday human constructed world that we have of the, you know, getting to my job and this and that it's nice to step back and even step beyond just the sort of earth-centric view to the larger picture. So I definitely enjoy it on that level. But it is also, it's the beginning of spring. And we usually celebrate the eight holidays as the midpoint of their season. So for us, the spring equinox is its first spring, but it's the midpoint of that first spring. It's still freezing at night. It can still be, the days can be bitter, but sometimes we get these beautiful days and the trees are starting to bud. And there's no full leaves yet, but you can see that life is going to be returning. And it's the first seeds we can plant for our annual garden too. Our last frost isn't until the middle of May, but there are some things like our tomatoes that we can start as early as March. And for me, I'm just itching by the time the equinox comes around to be back outside and back in the sun and being able to be outside without being completely bundled up like the little boy from the Christmas story. So, and then we, I guess we'll touch on this a little bit later as well, but in our celebration of the Wheel of the Year, it's a time when we are celebrating the birds, specifically the chickens and the creatures that have eggs. So we're looking at new life and that hatching, that awakening, just as a theme. So what about you, Mark?
Well, you live in a much more extreme environment than I do.
That's right.
You're at 7,000 feet elevation. You're in high desert. Mm-hmm. So the
And I'm quite inland as well. You're coastal, is that right?
Yes, I'm coastal, and the that body of somewhat warm water really helps to mitigate the temperatures mm-hmm. that happen here. I'm only about 30 miles away from the Pacific Ocean. And so for us here, the spring equinox is blooming fruit trees and mm-hmm. gardens that have already started to, you know, come out in flower. The acacia trees and the daffodils and all those things, those are done by the spring equinox.
Oh, wow.
Those come out in early to mid-February. So it's a very different kind of time, but it's got that same sense. I guess I think of the February Sabbath as the inklings of the beginning of the earth waking up, the dormancy period ending.
For us, it's definitely the depth of winter.
Of winter. Yeah, for sure. And this is an important point to make, I think, which is that I really feel strongly, and this is reflected in my writing, that paganism, if it's really going to be about the earth, needs to be about the earth where you're at.
Your ecosystem.
Yes, your ecosystem, your climate, your organisms, your skies, your water, your land. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage people to define the wheel of the year according to what's going on in their local area. I think it's a very odd thing that so many pagans are celebrating a wheel of the year that's about how things are in England or how mm-hmm. they were in England 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, I've mentioned this before in the February Sabbath at the beginning of February. You know, the sort of traditional Wiccan approach to things is, oh, we are casting seeds out on the snow. Well, we don't have any snow. What we have is very, very happy green grass growing everywhere because it's raining like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we get to the spring equinox, to me, it's really about the full flower of spring. That you know, beautifully scented, green, abundant, delicious kind of time when everything is new and fresh. And metaphorically, as I think about the wheel of the year, which is in my mind more of an arc rather than a wheel, because when you get around to Hallows, that's death and there is no rebirth. There's only the waking up from dormancy. So we may need to cut this out because it's complicated.
I know. Well, let's see how it goes. I'm really curious about this because it's definitely a different take than my take on that wheel. So I'm really curious.
Okay. Yeah. Great. I'll get back to that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying about the spring equinox is that it's metaphorically, it's about childhood.
Okay.
It's this early moment, whereas infancy might have been at the beginning of February. The sort of bright pastel colors and dyeing of eggs and all of those very childlike, innocent, happy, unburdened by adult concerns feeling that comes out at the spring equinox, which I call high spring,
mm-hmm.
the high point, the midpoint of spring. Is very meaningful to me, and I've held gatherings before where the celebrations were basically playing Candyland and chutes and ladders and dyeing eggs and eating jelly beans and just doing all kinds of kid stuff.
Oh, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And you'd be amazed at how competitive adults can get over chutes and ladders. but it is, it's a holiday of lightness. There's the feeling of that ponderous heaviness of winter having melted away. And now there's a new opportunity and there's hope. It's a celebration that really is about hope. So I'll go back to talking about the wheel of the year or the arc of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in an afterlife.
Yeah, neither do I. No,
I don't see any evidence for it, and so I start to get a little disjointed when people talk about the cycle of death and rebirth,
mm-hmm.
because things don't get reborn. There's never going to be another one of me.
Sure.
There will be a next generation for sure. Mm-hmm. But so when I think about the wheel of the year going over the winter time, the Samhain holiday, which I call Hallows, is really about death. It's about confronting the fact that we're mortal and that everything dies and that that's okay. And having conversations with our departed dead and, you know, coming into grips with the fact of ancestry and mortality. And so when spring comes along, it's not, oh boy, look, rebirth from death. It's more about the earth waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of those plants, all of those trees, they've gone to sleep, in essence, in mm-hmm. order to survive the cold period. But now they're waking up again and going through their cycle. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I definitely see, so I think we have some commonality, and I also do not believe that there is an afterlife. Mm-hmm. You know, when I die, I am gone, but the parts that make me up are not gone. The literal elements, the material that forms me. And for it to pass on to something else and get to be part of life, of some other life, I have to die. Or at least part of me has to die. And so for there to be life, there must be death. And so for the Wheel of the Year, when we start to get into the fall and into the winter, it becomes a celebration of our ancestors, and our ancestors not just being my mother's 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 mother, but also that cow I ate and
sure.
the grass that cow ate. And it is about that passage. It is about the decomposition and the decomposers and that relationship of the predator and the prey, and seeing that it is a continuation. So I think that I'm looking at the Wheel of the Year from the perspective of a whole ecosystem as opposed to one individual organism within mm-hmm. that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also noting in that cold winter period for a temperate region, it is also a time that the mycelium, the fungus underneath, is most active. And what it is doing, it's insulated and breaking down all of that came from the autumn, that came from the summer, and it's going through the process of becoming new soil. So the ecosystem renews itself.
Yes.
The individual is just a piece of that ecosystem. And everything that she or he was continues in some other form, but not the pattern, but it changes. It's no longer that individual.
Yes. The what we think of as the personality or the soul, which I don't believe in a separate soul, it's an information pattern that is alive in the neural net of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And when the brain stops working, that information pattern dissolves and the energy radiates away as heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so at a physical level, we are gone.
Yeah.
However, humans are storytelling creatures. And as long as we are remembered and our works are remembered, then there's still a piece of us that persists.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a thinking piece. It's not a self-aware being, but it's an element of the history of the universe that's been folded into everything else that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel that the storytelling aspect of encountering and contemplating ancestors in the fall is very important, because this is the way we remember our loved ones when they die.
Yeah.
This is the way we pass on valuable lore to subsequent generations. You know, with a bit of luck, your children will tell the story of how you taught them to do rituals that helped them to live a full and joyous life. And that piece of lore about you will persist into subsequent generations for a while.
Mm-hmm. For a time, yeah.
For a time, and then everything's forgotten sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the challenge of being a non-theist, naturalistic, philosophied pagan is really to come to grips with the truth of mortality and its finality.
Yeah.
And why are we talking about all this, the spring equinox?
Well, because it's all connected. You can't talk about life without talking about death.
That's true. That's very true. But as I was saying, at this time of year, you know, we have the flowers that have come up and they're all waving their sexy parts at one another. And the air is shirt sleeve weather, and it's just very
sounds wonderful.
Very pleasant. It really is very, very pleasant. We still get occasional rain, but it's not the sort of ongoing wall of water that we often get in February and March, or February and early March.
Yeah.
So it's just a lovely time, and it as I said before, it really does bring to mind that idea of renewal and innocence. And so, and I like the idea of there being a holiday that's specifically about the children in a community too. I think, you know, we get not much further down the road to May Day or Beltane, and that has lots of sexual pieces sort of sewn into it. And it's very much about the adult experience, but, I think it's important to have a moment in the year to really center the young who are coming up.
Yeah.
Do we have another question?
We do. And that is how we practice it.
How we practice celebrating
the equinox.
Okay. Well, I already kind of described what I do. I mean,
I love the chutes and ladders. That's great.
Oh, it's so fun. It's just a great thing to do. And you know, you have Candyland for kids who are so small that they can barely, you know, comprehend the idea of a board game. And you drink pink lemonade and you just have a very kid oriented kind of a birthday party sort of thing. For a toddler, but it's for everybody. And it's an opportunity to make some beautiful dyed eggs that you can take back and put on your focus or altar, or have for breakfast or whatever it is that you choose to do. But I've done these kinds of celebrations a few times, and it's remarkable how much the adults are just beaming at the end of it.
That's great.
How about you?
Yeah. Well, I think I touched on this a little bit at the beginning. We celebrate the seasons of the Wheel of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And the specific holidays are the midpoint for us, sort of the high point of that season.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our first spring, and we make a point of bringing what is happening outside in with us. So we will do things like gather feathers or look for, because we do have some plants that are starting to wake up, bring some of that inside.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to, I think that having traditions in the home, I think is really special for a family. And that was something that my husband and I both talked about, that we really wanted some of those traditions, even that was something we thought was very valuable that we mm-hmm. saw particularly religious households doing, even though there's other elements to some of that we didn't connect sure. with, but that tradition we thought was beautiful. So we change out the colors of the bedding that we have, and what is the blanket that's hanging over the couch, and the curtains change, and I use a diffuser. I certainly do not buy into the almost magical claims about essential oils, but
sure.
I think they smell really good.
Yeah.
So I put them on in the house, and we change that through the season. So we're starting to use smells like lemon and rosemary, and as the seasons progress, we change the scents, the colors, the types of foods. We try and eat very seasonally.
Mm-hmm.
And for the older members of the household, it's a very, we're pretty much in full keto at this point, because there's very little left from the previous harvest. We've gone uh-huh. through all of the sweet potatoes and the squashes and all of that, and we're at the time where the greens haven't quite coming up yet.
Uh-huh.
So it's that excitement of the new season that's about to come and the birth that's about to happen, and the eggs as well. We love that. We don't have chickens at the moment, but this is a time of year where a lot of them, because of the chickens, if you're not forcing them with artificial light, they lay according to the amount of sunlight. So mm-hmm. this is a time where they start laying again. So there's lots of eggs again. And then the other thing that we do is mentioned how the wheel of the year, each season we have a special focus mm-hmm. about some part of the ecosystem or some that we rely on in our human understanding. So we focus on the birds and that new life. And we do what's called whole family learning, which is the idea that learning isn't something that you stop doing just because you left school, if you even went to school anyways. Learning is something that humans do mm-hmm. and that curiosity continues. So we like to have documentaries and audiobooks and things like that. And we'll sort of on just in general, and we will theme it around what's happening in the world around us.
That's great.
So, yeah. So this is a time of year where we focus on documentaries that are about evolution. For instance, how did new and adaptation to how to new ecosystems come from older ones? Mm-hmm. How did that succession happen? And then around the main holiday, we'll have a feast with even family members or friends who are not particularly pagan. It's still nice to several times a year, bring everybody together,
sure,
have a meal together and celebrate the season. Because even people who have very strong beliefs about God and Jesus and all of that can usually appreciate that, hey, spring is on its way.
Mm-hmm.
This is great.
Sure.
So that's our general approach for the
That's season. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I wish I'd grown up in your household.
Well, that's kind of you. we're trying to make it a wonderful place. That's the goal. So
well, That's a good goal to have as a parent. I think that's very respectable.
So let's see, where do we go from here?
Was that all our questions?
We had, how does it fit? Yep, so how does the spring equinox fit into your overall yearly celebration and your the Wheel of the Year, for instance?
Oh, well, yeah, I talked about that some. And I don't want to disclose everything that we're going to talk about for future holidays. So, I just feel like newness, innocence, new life, childhood, all of those kind of qualities are the things that I really see as kind of dominating the theme of the brightness, the height of spring. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I celebrate it. One thing that I do some years, I didn't do it this year. Sometimes I make a corn dolly that I then keep on the focus for all the various rituals around the course of the Wheel of the Year until I get to Hallows or Samhain, when that burns in the Samhain fire. So that's the end of its life cycle. Mm-hmm. So that's a sort of a little symbol of this little person who's getting older and older and then finally dies.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that you will do in the spring?
Yes.
You'll make it and then hold it. Okay.
Yes.
And then it isn't there during the winter because right. Death is
right.
Because death is dead.
It's yes, not, death yeah. is dead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we didn't have this in the question, but at the beginning you touched on your view that if paganism is to be earth-centered, then it may be very helpful for people to focus on their ecosystem and yes. what the Wheel of the Year is for them. If somebody was just beginning this to explore that, do you have any advice for how they might begin to create their personal Wheel of the Year?
I do. And the advice would be to go to atheopaganism.org. And at the top of the sidebar, there is something that says, if you're new, click here. Mm-hmm. And it'll take you to a post, which also links to other posts that are about thinking out your own Wheel of the Year, getting started with building an altar, having your first ritual, all those sort of initial steps to starting a practice. What you just asked for is something that I was asked for over and over and over and over again as I first started the website, and I finally pulled all the resources together that I could mm-hmm. in order to help people with that. But I guess going and availing yourself of those resources, I guess my other advice is start paying attention. You know, get outside more, see what's happening with the sky. Be aware of, know what phase the moon is in. Mm-hmm. Know what kinds of birds are migrating through at this time of year, and what the native wildflowers are that pop up first in your local area. All of those are things that will help you be better connected with the ongoing processes of the natural world. And all of that helps us to have more of a sacred relationship with the earth.
So it sounds like you mentioned two components there. One is a sort of an intellectual, almost research component, where you're learning about which birds are there. And then mm-hmm. another, a more experiential of just being and noticing.
Yes.
Does that sound like what you were trying to get at?
Yes. Okay. And I have to say, I am not the best in the world at the former part. I can name, maybe five early spring wildflowers that come up in my local area, but I can't name dozens of them. Mm-hmm. I just know the first ones that are the very first indicators that spring is on its way. And I'm not super great with bird identification either. I mean, I can recognize some of them, especially, you know, the big...
The charismatic.
Yeah, the raptors and stuff like that, and the owls that are in our local area. But it's enough. It's enough for me. I don't feel that I need to know the minutiae of all the players in the ecological dance in order to appreciate the ballet.
Mm-hmm.
What is your thinking about this, about how people would get started or how they would organize their Wheel of the Year?
I think that very similar to what you said, that being present with your ecosystem is, I think, a really important step. And I think it depends a little bit on the personality of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
That some people might be more comfortable diving into that research aspect a little bit, or keeping a nature journal, taking mm-hmm. a notebook out with you and just jotting down, you know, what do you see? What do you hear? And for some people, that can take away from the experience. It makes it too wordy, too heady.
And documentarian.
Yeah. But I think the key is the consistency of being outside and being just taking that time, whether it's you go out once a week, or I think last time I shared about our practice of sun time and star time,
mm-hmm.
that once a day, at least once a day, going out during the day and once a day going out at night, and just building that into your day and being present with that. And after a time, I think one, that's be beneficial for you on many levels, if nothing else than just helping helping your circadian rhythm to get in, mm-hmm. in balance. But after a time you start to get a sense of the world that you are in and part of. And from there, thinking about what is happening at these different points throughout the year. And it might not be these equal distance 8 holidays that,
right.
Because we celebrate it as 8 seasons because we really see 8 distinct seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, especially, hey, if you're in the tropics, you don't have the 4 seasons. You have your rainy and dry. Yeah. And if you're right at the equator, you have 2 of those each year, not just 1.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really different, and the holidays might look different.
Well, and also people who live in cities.
In cities, yeah.
People who live in really urban environments, it may be you have to look for subtle clues
mm-hmm.
to what's happening in nature around you. You know, are the trees leafing out? Are they dropping?
The dandelions coming up through the cracks.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. All those kinds of things. And you know, having lived in cities, I believe that it is possible to have an earth-revering mm-hmm. relationship with the world and to be aware of what's happening in the systems around you, even if you are in a highly urbanized area. Of course, it helps if you can get out of the city once in a while and go to the nature that's around there. And I think most people who have a spiritual calling towards revering the earth are inclined to do that. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're apt to go off hiking somewhere or camping or whatever it is.
Well, and then if they don't have the opportunity to do that, if they have a yard, maybe a garden, or even a potted plant in the window,
mm-hmm.
can help a little bit with that connection.
Yes.
And the other thing for people who are living in the city, and I would encourage looking into cave ecosystems. Because there's a really interesting thing that has been noticed, and that is a lot of the wildlife that lives in the cities with us are species which came from around the outsides of caves.
That's so interesting. I've never heard that.
Our pigeons, our, you know, the rats and the mice. And so there's a tie back. Our urban species are also cave species.
Hmm.
And so somebody might find a connection there.
Uh-huh. And of course, we were a cave species as well.
Yeah, that may be... They probably just came along with us,
just
right?
Followed along.
Yeah, that we...
Well, those people have food. We're going with them.
Yeah, well, we have a symbiotic relationship going on.
Yep.
So, you know, we often think about ourselves as conquering the earth and on our own, but we have this whole range of species that have come along with us.
Mm-hmm.
On whatever this journey is that we're doing, and they have played as much a role in shaping our civilization and experience as we have in shaping them.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I this goes back to, you know, kind of a core principle of earth-based paganism, which, I mean, it's almost trite to say it, but everything is connected.
Yeah.
It's everything, literally everything in the universe is connected by structures, some of which are so large that we're only starting to realize them now, in the microwave background radiation.
Mm-hmm.
The degree of sense of isolation that so many of us feel now in our modern industrial capitalist world is... I wouldn't say that it's illusory, because I know that people do feel very disconnected and they feel very alone. But they're not nearly as alone as they think they are. And when you start looking around and understanding that this impossibly amazing network of systems gave rise to you, it just puts a completely different light on your life. Mm-hmm. It helps you to understand your very existence in a way that kind of a nihilistic chasing for the dollar does not.
Yeah. And I think can really inspire and create that sense of awe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a sense that I enjoy. Yep.
Yes, which it's absolutely built into us to want that. It's why we climb mountains. It's why we go to movies that knock our socks off. We love to be wowed. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot in the world to be wowed about.
Yeah.
So having a religious, a spiritual practice that is intentionally about learning to work with your own psychology and the functioning of your own brain in order to maximize the amount of that sense of wow that we can get, is a helpful and a healthy way to proceed. I really feel that this isn't going to come out sounding very well, but I really think the only real religious orientation is towards the sacred earth and the universe. I cannot comprehend how any mere personality or personalities, however powerful, whatever their stories, can compare with just the sheer operating body of planet Earth, which gives us every breath, every drink of water, everything.
Yeah.
So that's my prejudice.
It's one I share. Well, I think that is a fantastic note to finish up on.